All right. Well, welcome. This is the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee Executive Committee meeting, the first one. So thank you both. To start, I just really appreciate you both accepting positions of chair and vice chair. Formally, I will call your names, and obviously you're here, but if you can just unmute and confirm, much appreciated. So I'll start with Marisa.
Here.
Thank you. And Jamila?
Here.
And Jamila, do you prefer Jay or Jamila?
Either is fine.
Okay, great. Thank you. And with that, we've met quorum and I can officially call the meeting to order. To start, I wanted to kind of just get us together and have an open discussion around a few kind of topics and get a feel for you both as how you envision your roles as chair and vice chair, you know, what we can expect moving forward, some housekeeping like scheduling. I do have a few items that are ready for the FHAC agenda meeting, the full committee in January. I'd like to give you a sneak peek of that. And then I also just wanted to kind of talk about how we're going to move through this work and your roles in facilitating that process of getting ourselves to the actual fair housing plan. So a lot of items, but it's not really presentation. This is all discussion, and I want you both to, you know, feel free on mute, jump in as you see fit. Okay. Great. And to get us off this lovely but somewhat bland agenda share screen, I'm actually just gonna switch us over to a quick PowerPoint that essentially has the same information, but breaks it up for us a bit. Okay. I'm assuming everyone can see the PowerPoint for me. Great. Okay, so I'm just going to kind of move through here, the first topic being the roles of chair and vice chair. So when we look at the bylaws for FHAC, you know, it's kind of vague. It's, you know, describing these roles as helping with meeting facilitation, encouraging participation and assistance in building consensus among the committee. So I want to kind of pass it to each of you as far as how you would like to see your roles as chair and vice chair. If you see yourself facilitating meetings and, you know, taking the vote and kind of where your level of comfort is and how you see yourself fitting in as chair and vice chair into the committee. So I'll start with Marisa.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, I think that facilitating and encouraging participation, all of that sounds totally doable. I'd be happy to take an active role in that. At the same time, I think it kind of also depends on, you know, what's on the agenda. So if there are, I know that we've had times where there are presentations that it helps a lot to kind of have familiarity with, you know, what's on deck and like, you know, be able to kind of facilitate Q&A in a more formal way. And so I think it just would help to kind of have check-ins like this to kind of be ahead of that and know where the facilitator role fits in. But in general, I think I'm happy to just kind of plug in wherever is useful.
Awesome. Jay, how do you see yourself in the vice chair role and fitting into this?
I can do all of these things. These are fine. Assisting with building a consensus. So I'm often the wild card in the room. So that's where this, you know, I like to bring varying perspectives into the room so they can all, we can all sit with different things. So assisting to build a consensus, that sounds fine if we can all decide on what that is going to be. But also as a facilitator and as an equity informed facilitator, I want the divergence. I want to hear everyone and try to get to someplace in the middle. So yes, with all of this, and I don't want to feel like because I'm vice chair that I'm, you know, there's a voice that has to be, that I have to quench my voice, you know. So that's it. But all of this seems very easy. It's fine.
Yeah, I think that builds up a great point. I kind of wanted to spend a good chunk of us meeting today kind of talking about, you know, it says building consensus, right? But obviously not every single person on the committee is going to fully agree, right, with what the committee decides to provide as feedback formally in the Fair Housing Plan process. One, I don't think you need to, you know, quiet your voice down at all. That's, you know, the reason why you're on the committee in the first place, right? And that shouldn't be diminished at all because of your role as vice chair. If anything, I think that it is a positive quality, right, to ensure that we are considering all different perspectives that we can, right? And then we come up with something balanced and thorough with an equity lens in the end, right? When we're talking about what are the policy recommendations that are going to go into the plan.
Mm-hmm.
That's the language that they use. I think consensus is an interesting choice, but of course we also do have to get to a work product, right, at the end that everybody can agree on. And I'm not quite sure what that process is going to look like. And I'm hoping that the two of you will help me piece that together as we move in the meeting. And Marisa, yes, to your point, the, you know, having a heads up and a sneak peek about what's happening, that's what we'll be doing during the executive committee meetings. And, you know, it can also be a space of tweaking things like, okay, the process that we're using, you know, to try and get to a set of recommendations isn't really working, or the format for the meeting structure isn't really working. So that's what this space would be for. So hopefully if you feel better prepared, right, to facilitate those meetings after leaving an executive committee meeting.
That's great. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And to go back a little bit to Jay's point, I'm so glad you brought that up, because around building consensus, that can mean so many different things. And, you know, I guess I would say in my experience, a lot of times that has less to do with who is helping build consensus and more about how. And, you know, I would say that so much of that does require the adequate amount of space for people to kind of at least bring maybe like a more in-depth perspective. I would just say, like, it really depends on what kind of consensus you want to build. But like, for example, when you have a meeting where it's very heavy on presentations, and then there's limited time for folks to ask questions, or even the way you set up the meeting, there isn't necessarily like that level setting of like, so where are people coming from on this topic? It can make it harder to reach that place at the end where you're hoping folks can, whether it's about, I want folks to buy in a way that is much more like a larger amount of people feel good about it, or even just like, I have enough people who seem to care and have buy-in on this. Either way, I would say time is such a big part of that. So I just want to put that in there too.
And I'm going to be 100% honest. I have an idea, or else I wouldn't be here, about what we're here to do. But I don't know. I know that we're building recommendations. I know that, but I don't know really anything else, to be honest. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to be, because this is something that I really, really care about. And so like, I don't know, I guess am I the only one who doesn't know?
No, Jay, and I, let's clear that up, right? So there, and I'll just be, you know, honest in that, you know, the timing of kind of putting FHAC back together as an advisory body, right? There was an idea that there would be this full comprehensive fair housing plan process that was going to get started a little bit sooner, where there's an analysis done on a certain section, right? Whether, let's say that's, you know, there's one section that's kind of about integration, segregation, right? Or where does folks with disabled household members, where do they live, right? How much accessible housing? And that we would go through those portions of analysis, right? And we would notice those trends, right? Write that up, have some rough policy ideas, or let you know about policies that are currently in effect around those subject areas, present that to FHAC, and then FHAC's, you know, coming back and saying, well, you know, did you consider X, Y, or Z? We think this would be a good policy recommendation. We think this is the root of the issue that is not being seen, et cetera. However, due to changes at the federal level, right, with the administration, which is something that we kind of kept bringing up, it became very unclear what was going to be needed, what was going to be required, where there would be technical support for the city of Portland to go through this process, right? The administration essentially ripped back the need for all fair housing planning in any kind of comprehensive way. And then election season happened and we said, oh, it's going to like come back and it might be different. You know, they might be asking us different things. So let's hold on. Let's wait. We got into that waiting pattern, that holding pattern, and FHAC started the meetings, right? And we didn't want to, you know, cancel those meetings. We don't want to, you know, just tell everybody to hold every time. So we've been trying to just kind of present information every time that's relevant. It's going to come up again and give some people some grounding while we figure out what the requirements are with HUD and figure out that planning process of, okay, what are we going to do for an analysis and how are we going to get to this plan? Yeah. Originally, it kind of gone to FHAC themselves, you know, asking that question kind of way back, if you guys both recall, but there wasn't quite enough structure. And I don't think enough movement in the group and the committee was so new that it became clear to me that we weren't going to get to something that was going to be structured enough for us to get to a meaningful analysis.
Yeah.
So at this point where we're at is we've decided to move forward. We have something to present to FHAC, which I'll talk about in a little bit about what that looks like. And I'll send it out to you both ahead of time as well. These are the areas that we're going to analyze. These are the contributing factors we're going to look at. And then we're going to piecemeal it out and bring it back to the committee for recommendations. So that was a lot of back history in there. Does that give you a better idea, Jay, of how we're moving forward?
Yes, ish. Yeah, I think there's so much time in between that we lose, that I have lost. Like, I remember the last meeting and I remember walking away with a lot of questions and sitting with it for a couple of days and being like, and feeling some type of way about it. But by the next time we meet, it's just like, I don't remember what the hell, you know, you write it down and it's, so I can't be the only one, especially in large groups of busy, busy people. So that's concerning to me. And, I have maybe a bias towards government with like the way that they roll business out in a way so shit can't really get done adequately. So, you know what I mean? So like that for my role is like, how can we make sure everybody in the room is on the same page just with what we're doing here, you know?
Yeah.
And what do we understand about all of the presentations so far? Does everybody have a real good understanding about that? So that, yeah.
Yeah. Between that, staff transitions on our side and the quarterly meeting, I do think it's been pretty disjointed. And I'm hoping that, you know, having a chair and a vice chair and then the staff support, we will get a clearer vision moving forward, right? And then we'll have the plan from PHB in January for you guys to say, this is the plan of what the subject areas that we're going to be moving through, and have a little bit more of a roadmap. Cool. Quarterly was suggested. I mean, maybe that's something to revisit at some point. I was not the staff support for the previous iteration of FHAC, but the set of recommendations that came out was that they wanted to suggest quarterly meetings. I can look into that a little bit more to see if there was what the reasonings were for that. But I do believe it was monthly prior to 2020. And then when they reconvened, we moved to a quarterly meeting schedule.
For us.
Yeah, for just FHAC as a body when the bylaws were rewritten, right? Because they were kind of disbanded and then new bylaws were written and it was reconvened. And that was when you were, when both of you, you know, were on the committee and we had that first meeting last year. Yeah. And so with that was the quarterly meeting schedule.
Okay. I had a question. I'm sorry if it's a little off topic here, but how much of the membership of the committee now is the same as it was before? Like, was there folks who were on FHAC that are still there, or was it completely new membership? I was really confused by that when I first joined.
Yeah, I think we have, Alan was definitely on it before, Alan Lazo from Fair Housing Council of Oregon. I believe he may be the only reappointment. I can double check and see if there's someone else. I believe everybody else was newly recruited, but there may be some overlap in terms of organizations that they represent. So for example, Disability Rights Oregon, I think there was somebody previously. The jurisdictional appointments, City of Gresham, Multnomah County, Home Forward, I can check into that.
Okay, that's really helpful. Thank you. And was it the same size as it is now? I'm just curious, like, are there the same number of people now, or are there more or less?
I will check on that. I know that when they drafted this, it was actually supposed to be larger based on the original plans, but based on who responded to the recruitment postings, it was narrowed down a bit. I want to say it was supposed to be 18 and we ended up at 16 or 14. Okay. We're at 16. Yeah. And then there was a shift as well in the number of seats that were held for jurisdictional appointments versus at-large community members.
What kind of things have they already accomplished? What recommendations have been heard so far?
So far, we haven't done any recommendations in this new reconvening, right? Because we haven't had it. The old one. The old one, I mean, the original Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, from my understanding, was originally born out of the 2011 analysis of impediments, which was that very first thing that we looked at and all those recommendations on that table. They had one technical team to make that, which were all the people doing the analysis, getting all the data, getting the maps together. And then they had the advisory committee that was working together to look and come up with those policy recommendations. And then one of the recommendations out of the 2011 analysis of impediments was to create a permanent FHAC.
And so they did that, but then how many things did they recommend and how many things were adopted?
That's on that 2011 recommendations table. I can resend it to you. That kind of gives you a highlight. It was, let's see, that would have been just about exactly a year ago. I can resend it where I have kind of a quick highlight table of, you know, section A, this was the recommendation, like make an opportunity map. This is what happened, you know, create FHAC. This is what happened. Address screening criteria. This is what happened. And notations of where nothing really happened. Mm-hmm. A lot of the recommendations did have some type of movement on them. There were some that are very vague. Things like create or maintain funding of fair housing education. Like, oh, well, you know, how do we measure that? That policy recommendation is like, yes, there exists funding for that, but it's not clear, right, whether it's adequate amount of funding or not, or if those programs are effective, or the scale of funding that would be recommended. It was just kind of very broad language. And so that's what made it really hard when we were trying to work on our own planning process as well for me to say, you know, how are we going to get to a plan out of this? Because a lot of these, the language is just so broad that we can say, yes, we did this, but there's not really concrete quantitative ways to measure it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I can look through my email, and if I can't find it, then I'll ask.
Yeah, I can look. I'll find out some more information too on the on the previous makeup for you, Marisa, of the committee, but I think the changes that they made, again, I wasn't here when they drafted the new bylaws or there for the discussion, but I would assume that, you know, those were made intentionally in terms of adjustments to size or composition of the committee.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's probably sufficient context for me. I was just curious about that. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of which, I did want to do a quick housekeeping of this meeting and scheduling for the three of us to come together. And usually we would have Ryan, our admin, as well. My thought was that we would want to meet the month prior to FHAC, and that it would also be quarterly. So similar to today's meeting is in December. The next full committee meeting is in January. So the next meeting for this would then be in March and the full committee meeting in April. So we would have
crazy that we're meeting. I mean, I don't know. It's like, how do we get anything done if we meet four times a year? How do we, is it not crazy to anyone else but me?
I think you're right. I think it just really slows down the pace of things. I mean, and I realize that the staff, you know, you're all doing a whole lot, but to me then that also feels a bit like public involvement or involvement of committee members is more minimal. I don't know. That to me just feels like, I think you're right, Jay. The math is a bit odd for a time to work together.
For any kind of meaningful recommendations or... again, it's what is that? Is it real that what we're doing, or is it are we tap dancing? Are we giving a show? And that's always going to be what the question is. So, I am willing to meet more. I didn't, you know, I didn't apply for this to not give myself to this, and I would be curious if that is how other committee members felt.
Yeah, would that be potential? Survey the members about whether they are even available and willing to meet more frequently?
Yeah, let me double check and make sure. I do know that it would take a bylaws amendment, but I don't see why that would be a huge barrier for us, and do a temperature check. Brianne, you are on the call. Do you have any thoughts about exploring this monthly meeting option, or I guess every other month? There could be a couple different
options. I was going to say that another strategy that you could pursue is identifying different sort of buckets of work and then creating subcommittees that could meet on a more regular basis and then reconvene at the quarterly meeting. So using that as a strategy to divvy up work products or areas of exploration and, you know, expediting work in committees and then reconvening as a larger body on like the other quarterly schedule.
Yeah, that's another avenue. I think also, you know, we're meeting with PHB. I think the additional time would really be more so for the committee to meaningfully come to policy recommendations. I don't think I'd be comfortable committing to us having like a full analysis coming out every month, just, you know, in terms of the volume of work that they're going to be looking at. So I guess what I'm thinking here is, right, like 1 month would be presentation, show you all the analysis, the maps, the figures, all of the data, what we want to show you. And then if we were going to meet monthly, or that subcommittee then would spend the next couple of meetings, the next couple of months, distilling down into a set of recommendations. And then we'd give you the next kind of piece of work. So I guess I want to be clear when we're talking about increasing frequency there. And maybe that was the reasoning for going quarterly, was that they felt that the analysis, you know, they needed more gaps of time to present something that was thorough. But I guess I just want to be clear on, in terms of the work that we'd be handing you, the additional time would be kind of for distilling down the discussion into those policy recommendations as a body.
Okay.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay. I can put this on the schedule and we could survey the full committee then in January. Do either of you want to volunteer to run that discussion? And I'll put your name next to the agenda item.
Not it. No, I'm just kidding. Marisa, you choose always. I'm always down to do it and I'm always down to not do it. So
sure. I mean, I'm happy to do it. I would just say, Jay, it sounds like you had a lot of really great contacts to bring. So maybe, I don't know. It just seems like a good, if you wanted to share that context, then maybe that would be better. But otherwise,
I would suggest that you facilitate it so I don't take up all the space as a facilitator.
Okay. Yeah, no, that works. Yeah. Sure. All right. I'll do it then.
All right. So Marisa, I'll put that on for you and you could, yeah, a few different kind of options. Subcommittees would be one way, increasing the frequency to every month or every other month or something. And then from there, if the committee kind of gets to a place of where most of the members want to go, I'll take it back to the Bureau and look at a bylaws amendment so that we can get that moving. Okay.
Sounds good. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And then I'll plan on just for now, the executive committee meetings until we make that shift being the month prior to the full committee meeting, but we can look at that again if we make changes there. Does this first Wednesday work for everyone?
Yeah.
First Wednesday of the month? Okay.
I would say, I think I have a conflict with that. Wait, is this the first Wednesday though? Is this the second?
Oh, second Wednesday. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, second Wednesday.
Yeah. If it's the second, I can do it. If it's the first, I can't. Yeah.
You can see me and my calendar are really getting along lately. And poor Jay thought we were meeting at 11. I'm so sorry about that.
Was that you? I think it was me. I think I gave times and then I just blocked out the time so I wouldn't book it. So, because there was no, there's no Zoom. So I was like, this is me. So I had blocked out from 11 to like 4. Or 11
oh, wow.
or something like that. So I was like, I'm gonna be doing this all day.
Okay.
Fine, it's fine.
And then I'll see after today, maybe we can decide whether we think an hour and a half or 2 hours is most appropriate, but it's the two of you. So, you know, whatever you'd like to do, I will make sure that we are here. Okay, so that's our first kind of two general items, meeting facilitation. So kind of, we would provide the agenda. I would provide you with the list and determining quorum. Is there one of you that feels strongly like you want to move us between agenda items or do the roll call? Or do you guys want to just kind of bounce off of each other for that? Or would you like me as a staff support to continue to do that?
I'm fine with bouncing off.
Yeah, I like the idea of just sort of taking turns or something like that. I feel like that, Jay.
Can we side talk?
That's another thing to kind of bring up.
Only not to say like, oh my God, this bitch is crazy, but to be like, yeah. To be like, hey, I want to, let's cut this conversation short. It feels like we're not getting anywhere. You know, like that kind of to move the agenda forward.
You can direct message one another. It will be on the public record, just like today is, right? So it's all going to be recorded. So keep that in mind.
I had nothing. This is how I talk.
But just because there's only two of you on this executive committee, you guys, that's why I was like, you guys can't actually meet about committee business or even email each other directly about committee business, because then you're at quorum, so you trigger public meeting law, even though there's only two of you. So keep that in mind, you know, in terms of communication. So if you're, you know, direct message in the chat, I know of no reason why that can't happen. Just keep in mind that, you know, the two of you communicating about committee business needs to be done within the context of a public meeting, and that those chats would be recorded between the two of you. Okay, so I'll probably just assign like one person to roll call, and then from there, you guys can kind of just bounce back and forth to move us forward on the agenda. And then I can continue to do public testimony if there is any public testimony, where I can call on folks and do that, because I'll have the registration list from anybody in the public. Okay. Next would be the meeting structure. So Marisa, you kind of touched on this earlier about, you know, making sure that we build in time. And so I have the structure of kind of how the agendas have gone right now, because we haven't had a whole lot of discussion time or what are we doing with this information. It's kind of just had like two sections for meeting topics. I think one of those probably needs to change into a discussion section to discuss whatever, either discuss what was presented at the last meeting, right? So that folks could have that time to think about it. But to Jay's point, if the meetings are quarterly, maybe that's too much time to think about it. Or do the topic first and then have the discussion immediately following. But the drawback to that, right, is that it's not necessarily giving folks a lot of time to digest what they just heard, or, you know, digest all of their questions that may come up later and that sort of thing. So on my screen there, you can see I've just got call to order, kind of updates from PHB staff. So that's where I'm telling you this is happening at the federal level, or, you know, this is what's going on at the state, or, you know, we were able to do this at the Bureau. The meeting topic. So previously that's been things like we just did the audit test report. We've looked at the state of housing report. We looked at that 2011 recommendation table. Then I have a period in the middle for public comment, just because I don't love to put public comment at the very end. It doesn't give committee members any time to kind of, if it were to carry on, or there was a lot of people for public comment, or it sparked a big discussion, if it's at the end of the meeting and then it's pushing five, I generally don't prefer that, but that's not to say we can't change it. And then I have, you know, we have extra time at the end. Public comment is kind of difficult to nail down. We don't seem to get a lot of it for FHAC, but it does happen. People can sign up online. They could email it and I could read it. I haven't seen a lot of public comment coming in so far though. So one day it could be nobody and the whole agenda shifts up. The next meeting, we could have three or four folks.
Mm-hmm. On that note, because you were talking about having public comment be at the end and the drawbacks there. I'm just curious, because I feel like I've seen this practice a bit more with a public comment being toward the middle of a meeting. And what are the drawbacks to having it be at the very beginning? Is that just like too hard for folks who might arrive late? Or I just want to understand some of the rationale by around not just having it be at the beginning and then that's...
Yeah. You know, I'm not a longtime government employee, so I tend to be like, okay, what do we typically go? And so I have never really seen it at the top. I would imagine the other part though that comes to mind is the very valid and often critique that these meetings, right, typically happen during the workday. So for folks to come in and make that public comment, right, depending on the meeting, sometimes that doing that at the beginning means that public comment is at 2 or 2:30 versus like 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So it can make it a bit more accessible for folks that are either getting off work or about to go to work to be able to participate. But again, nothing set in stone. If you guys feel differently or feel like it might be more useful towards the beginning of the meeting, we can do that. The only other thing I can think of is that, you know, you don't, when people come in from the public, you want to like have time and you do want to make sure everybody's heard. And if you do get a lot of folks, that is going to chew into any set agenda presentations and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's helpful to hear. I don't feel too strongly about changing it at all. I just more was trying to understand, because I like the idea of it being more accessible to folks who are either getting off work or on their way to work. That makes a lot of sense to me.
And we can move it to the end too, if you know, if you guys think having a little bit later. I don't want, you know, committee folks though that kind of nearing the end of their work day and it's pushing five, and you know, I want to make sure that anybody who does come is getting the committee's full attention and it isn't, I don't know, coming off as kind of like a, oh, okay, let's just hear some public comments and everybody signs off. But that's just me personally.
Yeah, so it's public, and the meeting topic, that's after the public speaks, going back to the meeting topic that we were up bullet point 3 under the meeting structure.
That would be my thought, that it would be more of like, I would change that to discussion. So far we've kind of just had like a lot of kind of small presentations. So they've both kind of been presentation. I'm also learning to kind of trying to learn the committee how many questions they ask. We haven't had a ton of participation in terms of asking questions or, you know, trying to open it up, which again, I hope to get both of your support in doing that. Where, you know, I think that last bullet point, that fifth one where it says meeting topic, could be repurposed to discussion about meeting topic, right? Mm-hmm. Or a reflection time or something, however we want to word that.
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Okay. The other option would be to, you know, that keeps kind of the one presentation and then discussion on those subjects into one singular meeting. And then based on our current schedule, quarterly break, and then a new topic.
But that, so that's the part, because not, you know, people process information differently, and yeah, it doesn't really work to give people, not me, because I'm a hare, that's what we call them, like people who process really fast, you have all the answers now, that's how I work, but for most people don't, and it's like a lot of situations I don't work that way. So to have people come back in 4 months or 3 months, whatever, and to be able to give good information after you've processed it, you bookmarked it, you wrote some notes down, and then 3 months later you're looking at your notes like, wait, what was this thing? But you know, it doesn't, just the whole structure of how we're rolling this thing out, doesn't feel good to me. It doesn't feel like it feels like it's smoke and mirrors, as opposed to really giving folks adequate time to hear what they heard, process it, come back together to reevaluate if we even heard the right things. You know what I mean? And it just seems like there should be more time allotted for folks who can't ask the questions immediately, which is probably why there's not a lot of participation, because it's a lot to digest. And then for my brain goes straight to like, what's happening with the equity, and what do I tell my friend who keeps applying for apartments? It's just not enough time.
Well, how about in the time being, until we have that discussion next month, but we can build in a recap kind of time, right? We could do it right after the updates probably. Where we can say, you know, as like a review last quarter. Now, again, this doesn't solve the entire issue that you have with the meeting schedule, Jay, and I completely hear you. And we're still going to, you know, move forward on that path. But in the time being, you know, having a small kind of window of, this is what we discussed last quarter back at, you know, the October meeting. These were the topics. We just want to check in. Does anybody, you know, did anybody have any further thoughts? Did any further questions kind of come up that still need to be addressed before we move into a new meeting topic? We could build that in as a stopgap.
I would even ask folks on the committee members to explain to each other, like, can y'all repeat what you have learned? Because if you keep talking at us, we're not going to process it and digest it and be able to really hold it. So it might even be more effective is just you just give us the bullet points and we have the discussion amongst each other to see if we really understand what we're doing or what we heard.
Okay.
Yeah, I like the idea of it being more participatory and less of a report out. Like, it could be a question prompt, like, what was your number one takeaway from the last meeting? Or did you have an unanswered question or something?
Okay.
Yeah.
Would you guys like me to put that on the meeting for January? And the last topic was the audit report from Fair Housing Council of Oregon.
For me, it'd be helpful to do that audit report, the 2011 report, all three of the things where we've been spoken to. Do you have a good command of what the analysis that we've shared with you, do you know what we were talking about? Can anybody else tell it? Repeat it, you know? And maybe you have bullet points that are the most important parts, the things that we should hold. And so it just to me, it's like, it's been a year and we've had four meetings, three meetings, and I can remember the last one. I kind of remember the recommendations one a little bit, But yeah.
Admittedly though, Jay, because we're going to be presenting, I think, a clearer picture in January. I also want to, if we go back to the 2011 table and back into the, I'm worried that people are going to repeat their confusion, which they are rightfully, because we haven't had a clear vision. And I don't want, you know, necessarily folks to kind of start off there, because I think most people are going to feel that same level of confusion that you felt. And I want to try to steer us out of that with this January meeting, where we're looking more at what the plan is going forward.
As long as we don't have to remember what the hell we learned before, if we can learn it all over again,
learn it all over. At this point, I'm like, I'll bring it back.
We're not asking people to know something walking away from here.
No. Right. I would say the audit report would be the thing, right? Because the audit report is going to be utilized again. State of housing report, we can look at again. We just had like a quick preview. Sorry, I moved and now I don't know where all my lighting is. It's very strange. We can look at that again. And the 2011 table, I think, we can revisit that, right? And apply it to what we're doing moving forward. So I think the only piece that we really need to be sure that folks did understand and have a good understanding of at this point is that last audit report. And and it's fresh, it's right there. It was just done this past fiscal year. So if they have any questions or have any recommendations about audit testing, I think we would want to get that from them sooner rather than later.
Cool.
Okay. I'll build that in then, and we'll try that tweak in the structure for this next one. And then again, we'll address the scheduling. Okay. So speaking of the agenda for next month, I will put this actually like in a draft agenda, and I will send it to both of you for approval. These are the topics that we have lined up. The work plan, which again, hopefully is going to give us some clarity moving forward. And I can give you guys a sneak peek of that probably next week. This is what we're going to present to the full committee. This is what it looks like. And it lists out each section of analysis. And then it lists out the data sources and work that PHP will do there. It'll also list, you know, who are we going to partner with on the technical side for the analysis. Just so that they're all aware, and then, you know, maybe some timelines. We're going to have to do some community participation down the road. That will be, you know, probably not until next year, like at the end of 2022, I imagine. Once we get through a bulk of analysis, then we'll start, you know, thinking our way around community engagement, community feedback on the report itself. So I'll kind of show you all those pieces.
Can I ask a question? Are we doing another assessment?
Yes, we'll have to. Yeah, we're up. We need to update the whole assessment.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's how we, yeah. And then get to those updated policy recommendations.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Yep. No, you're fine. I'm giving you a minute. Are you?
Yeah, I work in the government. I work with a lot of government, and there is a there's this in all this work. There is an obsession with assessments, right? With the very large lack of application for any policy change or recommendations, and it's like it goes the years, and then there's Niall's time because it's been 10 years. It's not the same. It can't be the same, right? But what happens over and over is it's always the same. It's different bodies of people saying the same thing. You know what I mean? So I guess I was thinking that there was the assessment and there's been some of the application has been, I don't know. I don't know. Okay, we can go, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. Some of it, yeah, it will be updating, repeating some of the stuff that's already in there, and you know, there'll be some change and some things that we will, you know, probably see exactly what we're expecting to see. Some of those policy recommendations are just too vague that I don't think they're very useful, if I'm being honest. Some there has been movement on, so we probably need to address. And there's probably policy recommendations that should be in there that are not, right? So by the end of it, hopefully we're addressing each of those pieces, updating the data, updating the information that we have, any relevant updates to the analysis and then updating the recommendations associated with each chunk. Okay. It's okay. Feel free. You're not offending me.
I know it's not you. Don't take it personally.
Yeah,
it's,
no, I'm not.
Anyway, so like this yeah. is not you. It's not you. It's the way things get done or don't get done, right? Like it takes forever to move the needle and then the needle is moved and it's time to reassess.
Yeah.
And we have still had the same conditions for the last hundreds of years in Black and Brown communities. Nothing's changing there, right? But we keep assessing the same communities and thinking we're going to get something different and nothing's happening. So there is where my frustration lies.
Yeah.
I guess if I can interject here, I do think, I mean, you're going to share what your plan is for this assessment. And I know that will be the time as a committee for us to kind of add suggestions and things like that. But it would be great to kind of see some of this analysis that Jay is bringing, like incorporated into that, like if there is any way in the methodology, just given that there may be like efficiencies and places to kind of like spend less time, if it is obvious that we are going to make the same findings or I don't know, like if nothing else, build in like a very clear comparison that sort of says, okay, look at this topic, very similar to 2011. So let's not spend, you know, pages and pages of, you know, wordsmithing to explain that as much as possible to just sort of keep us moving forward.
Yeah, no, I think, and it's a lot of work. We should be efficient with it anyway, right? I mean, the whole thing shouldn't just be spent, you know, poring over every single detail. I do think it gives us an opportunity, and Brianna will be happy to speak on this, though also to highlight some issues that maybe traditionally don't make it into these types of assessments or things that we do want to see incorporated, right? Absolutely. So in this January meeting, hey, you guys, what about this topic, right? I don't see this reflected in here. This is a really important factor that needs to be considered in this analysis. That opportunity is coming in January, right? As we kind of set the stage. Then when we move through it, we're going to read through it. And if the policy recommendations from 2011 all still apply and you guys don't feel like changing anything, then, you know, we'll continue to move forward with the next piece of work if that's what we need to do. But hopefully the body can transition out of not only just updating the Fair Housing Plan, right, but then looking at, okay, well, what is happening with it? Are these policy recommendations being implemented? Or how can they be incorporated so that they actually make it onto the ground, right? But the next question I have is, you know, what is that process going to look like for getting to that set of recommendations and looking at it, right? So for example, we had the audit test report just was presented. We're going to ask them to recap that back to us at this January meeting. How do you guys want to kind of gather thoughts or feedback about that audit report into a document?
I'm sorry. So I want to make sure I'm following. When mm-hmm. you talk about offering feedback for policy recommendations on the audit report, is that referring to the last meeting where we talked about the Fair Housing Council? Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, going back to what I think Jay was touching on before, and you know, I was kind of alluding to this too, is it would just be great to kind of get a little bit of a level set for folks to say, okay, so what were your main takeaways from that? Like, and maybe it can be framed a little bit more specifically to be like, what were your biggest concerns? What are the biggest problems? You know, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. to generate ideas towards solutions. Rather than just starting off the bat and saying, what is your recommendation for what should be done? Maybe first grounding people in what was going on, what is the problem that you see? And then if time didn't allow, at least that would build a foundation for some follow-up to members through like a survey or something. Say, okay, Bill, you know, given this discussion we had about the problems, now do you want to share some of your suggestions for solutions? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
I love it.
Okay. All right. Do we feel comfortable doing that at this next January meeting, asking those questions?
Yeah, about those.
What was missing?
Oh.
What was missing from the report? What were your key takeaways?
Concerns, takeaways.
All right. I had Marisa on the question about scheduling. Jay, did you want to handle this kind of recap time about the audit report?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll kind of take notes and we can touch bases at our next executive committee too, talking about how that went and what we want to do with that information that the committee gives us in January about the audit report and see how that feels.
Okay, so we're going to be going back to the last audit report, and then I guess I can look at my email, but there are some key takeaways that we should all have, right? So I would like to have some bullet points.
I'll resend the audit report that was presented to you too. And it has like the executive, it has like a summary in it and everything. It's not a super long document by any means. And I don't think we're expecting anybody to know all the particulars, right? But what those trends were. Those would be kind of the key takeaways for me that I would want people to have to kind of know, like, okay, what is audit testing, right? What protected classes were tested? What was not, and how prevalent was differential treatment for those groups, right? I think that would kind of be the big takeaways. From there, you know, it's up to the committee members to, I think, say, like, you know, were they interested in seeing more audit testing, different protected classes doing the audit testing, being used for the audit test, concerns that they may have had about the methodology or anything else. I mean, Fair Housing Council of Oregon, I'm not, you know, are experts in fair housing and they do all of the testing, right? But it would still be, if the committee wanted to make a recommendation that there were more audit testing or audit testing of all protected classes or more enforcement testing, anything like that.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll be guiding that, facilitating that discussion. Okay.
Yeah. And then anything, you know, we will use this report, right, when we're kind of looking at the full fair housing assessment as part of, you know, what does our enforcement look like? We'll have the Fair Housing Council of Oregon's audit test report data from that report, right? And we can also look at things like complaints made to Bully or calls that are made into legal aid services around discrimination issues, right? We can also look at Fair Housing Council of Oregon's, they have a hotline, right, that they operate for fair housing allegations. We can look at that data too.
So, sorry, just to make sure I understand kind of the framing of this discussion, it's sort of, coming from a place of saying that we need, like, the data that we get from Fair Housing Council is both in and of itself something we would like to share maybe some thoughts on or feedback, but also we incorporate it into what we're going to be doing for the fair housing assessment. And so when we say we want to generate recommendations, these could be recommendations about Fair Housing Council's report, but they could also be recommendations based on their report. Is that correct? Like,
yeah.
You know, we need more source of income protection or something like that kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's open. I think this one, the recommendations, you know, because it's like, oh, you don't want to like tell people how to do their programming, right? Necessarily in that kind of detail way. But yeah, it could be, you know, oh, well, you know, this shows us that there is a lot of, yeah, source of income differential treatment. Maybe there needs to be more education around that. We feel as committee members that not a lot of people know that that's a protected class. We're seeing that reflected, right? That there's differential treatment for this. We need to do more work around source of income. And maybe that gets refined a little bit more later on. It could be that, right? It could also be that, you know, we should just do more audit testing, right? Like that, you know, this is a glimpse into what's happening. We need to continue to support this activity and expand it if we can. I mean, the committee can kind of come up with the recommendations that, and they don't necessarily have to be critical, right? Or changing to anything that Fair Housing Council of Oregon is doing by any means. They can just be general policy or general recommendations or general feedback about what they learned about it.
And is it correct that there's no violation, no policy violation penalties? Is that true? I think I asked that at the last meeting.
For when you say policy violations, are you saying
for anybody who is discriminatory or like any of the things, people that were audited, what happens next?
Yeah, no, they're just an audit. It's not like an enforcement, right? So they're not following up on, you know, a person who is reporting. Those are the enforcement tests, right? Where they may do like they may send out a tester to explore a provider, right? After getting many complaints or something. That information could be used to support those tenants' individual cases. But the audit test is just like a temperature check, right? They're
even
not
the enforcement check or the test or the hotline. What's at the end of that if you're found to be discriminatory?
Yeah, a lot of them will try to come up with a alternative solution that addresses the tenant's issue, right? So for like a reasonable accommodation or something, right? They'll get that instituted. Some of them, you know, if they can't come to a conclusion, my understanding is then, you know, they have bully enforcements. They can go for like a civil lawsuit if they were not able to kind of come to some other conclusion. But based on what I heard from Fair Housing Council of Oregon and what I saw like in the 2011 recommendation, most of them are not going that full route. They're coming up with some other type of mediated settlement between the two parties.
This is crazy. Anything else that we want to be a law or to be enforced with? Okay. I don't know, y'all.
And that might be a good thing to talk about, Jay.
Yeah.
That might be a good recommendation to make.
I mean, yeah, it might be a good recommendation to make. But no, there's no, I mean, we don't have any licensing, right? We don't have, you know, there isn't anybody that's coming down that's enforcing that on their behalf. Now,
bully and HUD, right? Texas and ableist, they can just do that. But we can't park on the side of the street, though, because we'll get a ticket, right? So we don't do what we're not supposed to do if there's some sort of, okay, this is nuts. This is how they do us, though. This is what is constantly like when it's looking at marginalized groups, there's never any consequences, which is why we're here in 2022.
I mean,
there's gonna be a lot of this, Marissa. I'm sorry. You should have chosen another vice chair. There's gonna be a lot of this with me.
I really appreciate your authenticity. And I would say, you know, that emphasis on enforcement is key because I think you're right. I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier about going back to 2011 data and simply saying, let's get more data. Rather than saying, okay, even if we had policy recommendations at that time, you know, to what degree did we, I mean, maybe this is strong language, but like eliminate some of the bad practices that were taking place rather than just saying, these are here, let's create this particular, you know, rulemaking or incentive or et cetera. Like, where did we leave those situations as they were at the time? And then now here we are 10 years later, there may still be some of the same landlords who were discriminatory in 2011 just operating now. That's the reality we're in. So I do like the idea of just being very, I mean, maybe again, this goes back to the work plan, but just being very strong in emphasizing enforcement and saying that no matter what we do, part of the framework is that, you know, fair housing means very little if no one enforces these laws, right? Like something to that effect, maybe.
I think there's a few barriers there too, right? I mean, that's not just in terms of differential treatment on protected class, but just other landlord-tenant issues and other housing issues that are, you know, that it puts a lot of burden on the tenant, right? Or on the person seeking housing to to initiate and move through this entire court system. And we all know there's a lot of other barriers, right, within the court systems themselves, and that's how they have to access everything. That is a larger issue. And I think it's definitely something that during the enforcement portion, and the audit test is just audit test, right? It's just a temperature check, but we will be looking as part of the overall work plan assessment. We're going to be looking at enforcement data, and I'm hoping to get some, they had data in 2011 from Boley, Lasso, and Fair Housing Council of Oregon, where we can look at the nature of the complaints and hopefully some dispositions as how did they end up, right, to Jay's position? How many of those went into, you know, a civil settlement and a damages assessment, right, where they were compensated, that tenant or that person seeking housing? How many did they mediate out into a different solution, and look at that data more? Maybe some of that hasn't changed, but there's also, I anticipate we're also going to see some shifts, and there might be some trends that, you know, are more surprising. Just for example, the audit report, you know, folks with accents and changes in who is used, you know, and during those audit tests, we saw a huge increase in differential treatment, you know, that was probably fueled by a lot of politics and the pandemic and everything else that was happening, right? That's not reflected in the 2011. So I also want to, you know, while I hear everybody and I don't want to kind of, you know, rehash all the same old stuff, we are going to see some shifts or some trends, whether in a positive or a negative direction, that, you know, we need to be looking out for as well. The enforcement portion, I think, can be a great place for some meaningful policy recommendations around how the enforcement mechanisms work. Yeah. But for January's meeting, I think it's more about, okay, a light touch of kind of, did everybody understand the audit report? Did anybody have any questions? Did they understand and digest what they were reading? And do we need any more information about that before we move forward with discussing the work plan?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I mean, it's one of the building blocks, right? Like, the audit report does tell us, like you're saying, a temperature check gives us a sense of the landscape, but building that into how we formulate our plans for the future is going to be really crucial at this point, it sounds like.
Okay, there's also I did have the audit report actually already on here for the January agenda to relook at that, and you know what we were discussing here, we got to, for my purposes, I wanted to talk about, okay, how do we discuss this stuff and how do we get people to engage and get a little bit deeper after presentations? So thank you both. I'm really enjoying the direction that this is going. The last bit, which is a little bit of, you know, just general information, letting the public know, Brian has an RSO budget presentation that we wanted to squeeze into the January meeting. Brian, since you're in this meeting, do you want to come off mute and talk to us a little bit about what Marisa and Jay could expect for that?
Yes. So it's not so much the budget presentation, because the budget will have mostly wrapped up by then, but really what the presentation can look like is a presentation on the RSO services. And the different, you know, ways that we serve the landlord and the tenant population in Portland. And so we sort of break it down by the mission of the RSO and then the sort of three main service areas that we offer, and then talk about the various types of services that we're providing.
Okay. Sorry about that. So kind of the programs that are included in the RSO budget, not the actual budget itself.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
It's the RSO services.
RSO services. Okay. So that would be more of a general, I mean, I guess there could be opportunity, right, for recommendations within that as well, right?
Yes,
the committee could make that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it can also serve as a really great grounding and introduction to some work that is already happening. Just so, you know, as the committee starts to think about recommendations for the future, sort of getting a sense of, you know, what programs are already being offered and thinking about, you know, are there additional information you want to know about these services, how they're actually impacting folks, and then thinking if there's like programs that you would like to expand or new services that you think could sort of serve the populations and serve particularly marginalized populations. I think that could be a good way to think about this section.
Okay. Thank you, Brianne. So those are our big areas there for the January meeting. So using kind of our, I'm gonna stop sharing this if you guys don't mind. I don't think I have, yeah, we already did that. You guys are so good. You were just working ahead of my my little slideshow there, which I appreciate. Using kind of the new structure then, I've, for my notes, just as a FYI there, I would have a, we would do the call to order and begin recording. We've got talking about the committee meeting schedule. And getting thoughts on that back. Do you guys want to do the recap regarding the audit report? Do you guys want to do that right at the top after the call to order, or do you want to do the housekeeping type of items of the committee meeting schedule first?
Well, I would just say, since we are going to be talking about recommendations around the audit report, maybe it makes more sense to have that be closer to that section. Does that make sense?
So
we're talking about the last meet, we're doing a recap, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are later in the meeting, we're going to talk about recommendations on the same audit report we discussed the last meeting. Is that correct?
I figured those would kind of be one item together. Yeah.
Oh,
like the
okay,
recap
yeah.
and the discussion. I could split it up, but I guess I was thinking sure. that would kind of happen at one time, that recap yeah. and then let's discuss.
Yeah, I agree.
At the top, you think?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, Jay? I just wanted to make sure they were together. Because
I just want to make sure we have a nice yeah. enough time to for people to really right. sink their teeth into it. But I really want to show y'all, we're gonna have a very human moment right now. Look outside at that. Do you see
oh,
it?
Wow. Rainbow.
Do you see it like I see
is
it?
Is that a double? Is
that's
that a double
rainbow?
That's a double.
Oh my God, look. Okay, sorry about that.
Thank you,
Jenna. I just cut out all the piss off itness I was feeling. Thank God for rainbows.
Okay. Thank God for rainbows, right?
Yeah, I just want to make sure we have enough time for people to sink their teeth into it. And so we're all walking away with the same information.
Okay.
Like knowing the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. So if we do call to order, kind of, then we'll do the recap and, you know, pull any recommendations or just thoughts that general feedback that people have. And again, I don't want them to feel pressure of like, you know, having to make very specific recommendations on this. We're going to probably revisit it again later. It will come up again, right? And also, I think some of the recommendations that come from this are probably going to start to veer into enforcement, right? So, but it'll be a good exercise to make sure everybody is digesting. So we'll do that. And then we can either move into talking about the committee meeting schedule. We can talk about the work. I think maybe talking about the work plan at that point would be good to give us a roadmap. Yeah. And then talk about the committee meeting schedule. What do you think?
Is the work plan going to lay out, what was the work plan for the assessment?
It's going to lay out like each section of analysis. Yeah.
I guess that.
So that one's kind of a big one. And so I'm. Yeah. And yeah. Maybe we talk about the work plan before the meeting schedule, because then I think it's going to become kind of apparent, right? After that, like, oh, okay. So do we want to do subcommittees? for each section, right, or a subcommittee that meets to kind of draft the ideas to bring back to the full committee for each section? Or do we want to increase meeting frequency? Maybe that would be most appropriate after the work plan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then the assessment, there's going to be surveying of community members. It's like going to be a large assessment.
Yeah. It's got all the, you know, we'll have the analysis, like if you look at that 2011 kind of as a guiding doc, that 2011 analysis of impediments, you can see they had like all those pages. It's a lot of paper, but they had all the pages of like, you know, this is the demographic breakdown, right? This is the amount of available housing. This is the cost of housing. This is, you know, this is what's available for education. This is what enforcement looks like. They have all the data. Then they have after that they have the recommendation table, right? They make the recommendations after each section and then they kind of compile it together into the large table, which has like basically a punch list of the recommendations. And then it also, they include all the information for the community outreach they did where they presented the assessment and the recommendations to the community at large. And they also did interviews with folks. They partnered with different culturally specific organizations and housing organizations and did interviews with people about their experience with their housing and issues that they were running into, and then transcribed those interviews and did a little bit of a qualitative analysis. And then we wrap it all up, put a bow on it, and then get working on it.
On the bookshelf, and then we're here again, and then we do it all over again. I wish y'all could see the patterns in like it's triggering for me. I'm always like, you know what? Go talk to your people, get 10 assessments since 1964 or whenever the act was put in, like get all of them and see where the parallels are, because it's always the same. There's more people, so your numbers are going to rise. There's less people in that community has changed because gentrification. Like, these are where we'll have the variations. But at the end of the day, there's no enforcement when it comes to Black and Brown people or marginalized people. There's no enforcement because they don't want to step on the toes of the ruling class, the normal people, right? So it's very frustrating that. And like, honestly, I'm going to spend the next month trying to flip it on its head. Like, how are we going to assess the assessment of the assessment of this? You know, like, what can we do differently so we're not recreating this thing that takes 5 years? And still, listen, I don't know if you guys remember, but I told you that last call that we were on, I had a friend, a Black man with a very Black name, who was looking for an apartment, and he was not getting any callbacks, or he would, and they would be excited, and then they'd talk to him. You know, like, and then he just wouldn't get all these places. He just got an apartment. And it was to the point, I didn't even know what to tell him. Like, I sit on this committee. I'm like, I think there's a hotline. I don't know. What are they going to do? Nothing. Nothing is going to happen. You can be discriminated against every single time, and not a thing is going to happen. Like, that's frustrating to serve, and knowing that that's the outcome, that if we're just going to do an assessment, there's no action, there's no application, there's nothing, there's no policy, there's no violation. If I was a landlord and every time I discriminated or every time somebody said 100 calls, you're getting fined. All these people aren't lying. They don't even know each other. You're getting fined. Step up your game as a landlord. But we don't do that for marginalized people because it pisses off the landlord and they own the land, right? So we won't find the people with, anyway, it's just triggering. This is what we're going, and this is what we are committing on this call to do. I want to be very clear that we're committing to doing another assessment where we're going to find more discrimination, more disparities, and then make policies that they may or may not take, but we will never turn the lens on them to say, what about this policy that was put in 2011? How is that measuring up? What are you doing to enforce this policy? What are the people like? There's a shift in lens, and I don't know where the shift is, but what I do know in my soul is that another assessment ain't it. So I just want y'all to know going into this meeting, that's where I stand.
Yes, Jamila, I think a lot of what you said it makes perfect sense. And, you know, I think you hit on some of that right at the end when you were talking about the need to include assessing of recommendations, right? And whether or not they were ever actually taken up, what barriers may have existed, how successful policies that have been put in place, like that, all of those things should be sort of in this lens of consideration as we undertake this work.
Yeah.
But Jay, I do want to acknowledge and thank you for feeling comfortable enough to like share that frustration, and you know that this is, you know, touching on, you know, the same things, right? Unfortunately, as it is. And I want to just say thank you for sharing that. And I want you to feel free to say all of that. And you know that there's a reason why you're on the committee, and there's a reason why you're vice chair, and it's everything that you're saying is exactly why you're here. So please don't feel like it's retracting, or that, you know, I mean, I think we need that pushback. And yes, it is another assessment, and yes, it is going to be another set of policy recommendations, but I'm hoping we can also do that evaluation, like Brianne just said, right, of the existing policies, be critical of where they're not working, and put pressure on ensuring that this goes somewhere.
I have a friend who actually works in federally in housing, but he works on the equity informed side. Can we suggest folks to present and to meet so he can, maybe he would give us a big picture. I don't know, and I'm volunteering his time, but maybe he would give us a big picture of what's happening federally and how, you know, how these, my brain is.
I completely encourage, if you want to connect me with that friend, okay. I would first check and make sure that they do want to volunteer their time.
But it's going to work for 2 hours. No, but
let them know. But I don't see why we can't. I don't see why we couldn't do that at all. I think that would be beneficial.
Marissa, I'm sorry, girl.
Don't apologize. No, I'm just reflecting on what you're saying, because I think I might have mentioned this at the last meeting, and you know, I've talked, I think, with folks at the rental services office about this before. Is just, you know, for me, there's a lot of curiosity on my part about how implementation of FAIR ordinance locally figures into this, because I think just there's some of this, I don't know if you could use the term theory of change within that, that is relevant to what you're talking about, Jay, because when we talk about housing discrimination, this is just me as a lay person who's worked on the services side. When we talk about housing discrimination, one of the things that I find to be the most infuriating about it is that it's really hard to prove, right? So you could have exactly the kinds of situation that the friend you're talking about is facing repeatedly in very obvious ways. And yet for that person to like pursue a legal strategy to enforce even on their own time, if they had a lot of money to do this, and hire an attorney, et cetera, it would be difficult to really fully prove that this is what was happening, even if it's a pattern that you see across populations and communities, et cetera, over time. So then what you find is that like other strategies when it comes to policy, even if they are not purportedly like, this is a, I mean, the name of FAIR is FAIR, but it's not necessarily fully a fair housing ordinance. It's more about screening and how people queue up for opportunities for housing. And in general, just creating more of like a regulatory environment for housing access, right? And so in that way, and it's sort of like an aside, sideways way to say, if we create different standards for how, you know, landlords are operating and just have there be accountability, or have there be, you know, actual like things you can point to say, hey, that seemed off. And now because that was off, there's something we can do about that. It's not necessarily as vague, even though I'm sure it doesn't feel vague, but it's a lot more like cut and dried, that something took place that a landlord was doing that was out of compliance, you know, with these rules that are designed to create more access. So I just think that's an interesting lens to bring into all of this, because that's new, you know, and hopefully there are landlords complying with that, I don't know. But I just think it's an interesting way to kind of talk about these recommendations, because as you're saying, too many times nothing happens. And what is like the quickest way to get something to happen? That's kind of what's always on my mind, is like, is it really that we need to get everybody an attorney so they can sue the landlords that seem like they're being discriminatory? Or is it that we need to create more rules so that if somebody wants to be a rental housing provider, it's not just like, do whatever you want, right? Like, just do whatever, we don't care. So I just think it might be relevant to how we look at that 10-year span of time as well.
Yes, I was going to suggest that maybe at some point, not necessarily in January, but having a review of the regulatory environment in Portland would be beneficial. So folks, when they start moving into the recommendation space, have a firm sort of understanding of, you know, what has been proposed before, what has been enacted, and then where, you know, what areas need to have more attention and breath put into it.
Yeah, that would be great.
I think we can definitely, do. We still have a challenge, and I'll be honest with Marissa, it's not the first time you've asked, and you're not the only person who has asked. And I will continue to ask on my end to see what we can put together, right, that looks like an evaluation, right, of the implementation of FAIR. And I know there's been complications because it came in right when COVID, right? It was like at the exact same time. And that, you know, obviously took everyone's focus for very good reason. And the focus has been, you know, on stabilizing households, avoiding eviction, rent assistance, right? And FAIR. And it also muddies the water, right, about what type of effect FAIR had on the market, because COVID, obviously, right, was a huge curveball. But the moment that that comes up, I will run it straight to you, Marissa, I promise, and bring it to the committee. Yes, I know. Okay. Well, I think I'm feeling pretty good about what we're doing moving into January, and what we want to see on that agenda, and kind of the feeling as far as the two of you are going to be kind of passing some things back. But we've got Jay taking the lead on the recap, and I'm going to follow up and just resend you that audit report just so that I make sure that you have it in your inbox towards the top and you're not digging around. And that you feel comfortable discussing what the key takeaways are and discussing your way with the committee around that report. And then I have, Marissa, you taking the lead on talking about the committee meeting schedule, which I am going to put towards the end of the agenda, so that we, at that point, have already talked about the audit report. We've had an overview of RSS services. We've looked at what this work plan is, which I'm hoping is really going to give us some rails in terms of like, how are we tackling an assessment and getting to recommendations, and what do we do with them? And then we'll talk about, okay, well, how much time do we need to get that done, right? And how do we want to organize ourselves around that? And then after the meeting, depending on what is said there, I will look into bylaws amendment in whatever way the committee would like. Okay.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay. I will go ahead and end this meeting then, and I will send out the agenda ahead to you so that you guys can both see it. Okay. And the next tentative executive committee meeting would be March 9th. And Ryan will send you out an invite, and I'm thinking 2 to 3:30. We took about an hour and a half today.
Wait, there's one in January.
The full committee, but for the three of us.
Oh, us. Okay.
For the three of us. So the committee meeting, the full committee meeting is going to be January 11th from 3 until 5 p.m., which should be on both your calendars. Uh-huh. And then sending to you, I will plan on the next executive committee, which is us, March 9th.
March 9th. Okay, perfect.
And I'm going to do an hour and a half.
Okay. Perfect.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both.
Yeah. Thank you for the great conversation, y'all, and all of the energy and passion you're going to bring to this work.
All right, rainbow friends, we are officially bonded by rainbows.
It's a good bond. It's
double rainbows. Double rainbows.
Yeah, it's not just any old regular rainbow.
All right, bye, y'all.
Okay, bye, y'all.